This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and I am back, Dave is back, and Dibier is back. Hi Dibier, how you doing?
Hello, hello, hello. We are once more back again, talking about all things data breach related. And do you want to dive right in?
Yes, so first step of doing a data breach is, that's not what the idea was, right? It's more about what other people have done.
Indeed.
And last week we talked at some length about ransomware, so we're moving on from that topic. And the next one that caught our eye is a very nice little ball graph that is talking about secrets leaked on Git. That is something apparently that happens quite a bit if I look at these graphs. And yeah. The main thing that made me kind of take a double take was that some of these secrets are on GitHub for over 160 days before they get taken down.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that I would say about this, because I know that sounds really bad, but the only thing I would say is I have seen situations where credentials are out there. So for anyone that's not familiar with it, and I'm sure if you listen to this, you probably have some idea, but if you accidentally release a well-known set of credentials, like your AWS key, for example, you will get a message from GitHub saying, you've published this type of sensitive data. Like they do make an effort to try and reduce that sort of thing happening. But what people have accidentally done in the past is they've ended up putting zip files or other compressed files uploaded and have had credentials in those files. And of course, GitHub is not going to be decompressing those files, and therefore you end up in a situation where there's a bunch of credentials there, and someone going through your online files that are publicly available and downloading stuff and decompressing and going, ooh, that's a nice surprise, and all of a sudden they've got credentials they can use freely, and without anyone necessarily knowing that that information has been publicly leaked.
Yeah, I was also wondering how many defunct projects are in here, where they can't even reach anybody anymore, because somebody forked something from another repo and they had a secret in there, and yeah, there's also some, but then I would expect it to be longer than 162 days.
Yeah.
Because I don't think GitHub has a active policy of cleaning up old stuff. I'm pretty sure they actually don't want to do that.
Yeah. No, I think, I could be wrong, but I think this stuff is, let's see if it mentions it here. No, it doesn't mention it here. I think this stuff is all stuff that has, is this all stuff that has led to a breach? Or is this just stuff that has been?
No, this is just credentials that were found.
Credentials that have been found.
Yeah, and another thing is that a lot of these credentials are probably just test credentials. I mean, I remember a long time ago at Hortonworks, that a financial institution did a code review of the thing, and they came up with like hundreds and hundreds of clear text passwords in the thing. Well, yeah, they were the placeholder text.
I remember,
put your password here, quote, hey, we found a password. So the detection engines themselves are also need to be a little bit more mature or complicated or know what they're doing, because you were there too, I think.
I remember that situation and that customer.
I had to talk for weeks with them to make them understand that, yes, you also code reviewed the unit tests, which need to have passwords filled in to be able to check if the function works or not. No, that can't be. So in the end, I think we had them. I don't know what we did, but at the end, they only tested the production and not the unit tests anymore. And then it was, it was still a couple of things. Nothing is perfect, but that solved that problem. But yeah, I don't think, though, that it's all that rosy. I do think a lot of actual harmful information is on GitHub.
Oh, yeah.
Because for a long time, GitHub was a free haven, right? You could use it for free and put whatever you want up there and share it to the world. And people weren't sophisticated and still aren't to some degree.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
So people, if you're using GitHub, close down your secrets.
Yeah, don't just don't publish secrets up there and you'll be fine.
Hey, I've done it myself. But I noticed it and I took them down again. It's so easy. You're just developing stuff and you're putting some stuff in there. And typical passwords you're using during development time won't go to production, but we all know that some stuff gets left behind. And at some point, the master password is still the test. I mean, how many routers on the internet with the admin password?
Yeah, sadly, far too many.
Not mine.
No, indeed. All right, next area.
Yeah, let's move on. What was the next one? We had a fun laugh, a chuckle about talking about cyber risk management on page 19, if you're following along with us. Not sure what we're going to talk about this one. Oh, yeah, I had a little note on this one. One thing that came up in the report a couple of times, which I don't remember from older reports, is how intermediaries become a point of failure, not the word, a point of intrusion. A spoil. And that's happening more and more because outsourcing, and not humans, but applications, software, databases, to other parties, outsourcing it to different data centers, is something that happens more and more and more. And we're not just talking about going to private, to public clouds, even private clouds, government clouds, soft clouds, any kind of in-betweens, and the use of a lot more SaaS all the time. We're using more and more SaaS all the time, which has its benefits. But it also means that you need to trust all those partners in your chain of whatever it says you're doing, are doing the right thing when it comes to keeping things safe. Because the moment you use a SaaS service, you don't know what kind of backdoors are in there. There probably will be, because their sysadmins need to be able to do things in the environment, but you don't have that clarity. Now, there's a lot of code reviews happening, and you have the STAR and ESO certifications, compliance checking. There's a bunch of them out there. So there's definitely some work happening there. But in this report, at a couple of points, this came up, that the man in the middle is these days not necessarily the attacker, but one of your close partners, which was not surprising. And if you think about it, makes total sense that the more chinks and the more links in the cable in the chains, that's what I'm looking for, more links can break. But it's something that I wasn't aware of, and I've been working in the security industry for a while now. Kind of was a aha moment for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no further comments on that one.
No further comments on that one. I want to get my teeth into the next one.
He's so motivated.
Mm-hmm. The next one being the threat actors. So the who that is driving the incident. There's a few nice sort of graphs on this. This is page 22. But, you know, the threat actors in breaches, 81% of them are external. You know, that checks out. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, that sounds like 18, a good thing until...
18%. That does leave, however, 18% of them are internal. Now, keep those numbers in mind when we start to talk about the motives, but we'll come to in a minute. So the sort of the patterns that people are using external sort of actors... 65% of it is system intrusion, so just breaking into systems, 22% social engineering, and it sort of drops on down from there. And again, that sort of checks out to me, that sort of makes sense. I would have hoped maybe that system intrusion would be higher and social engineering would be lower, but, you know, that sort of is what it is. But the patterns that are used for internal actor breaches, 65% is people just exploiting miscellaneous errors. And the second most, like, so that's 65%. The second most used is privilege misuse, 31%. Now, to me, this reads a lot more that, I'm not going to say that that sort of 18% of internal threat actors, you know, that they're completely unaware of what they're doing, but I'm sure that there's a good chunk of those folks who just thought, oh, I'm just getting around this like irritating sort of security restriction. Like, I'm just trying to get my job done without a lot of hassle. I'll just exploit this little error that I know exists to get the data I want. Or I'm just going to, you know, sort of escalate privileges, you know, where I shouldn't necessarily have done to get this done. I strongly suspect, because of the way that's weighted, that that's what's happening. Because if 65% of it is miscellaneous errors and 31% of it is privilege misuse, the next one drops down. It's 4% is lost and stolen assets. So that to me is, you know, that's your laptop or phone discovered in the back of a taxi or on a train or whatever, and people sort of using things that way. So I think there's a lot of the internal actor stuff is just people just trying to get their job done in what they think is a more efficient way to do it. It turns out they're actually, you know, breaking certain company practices and certain security practices. What do you make of that? Do you think they plausible?
Dave is such a fan of man. He's so positive and optimistic about how not dark we are. I mean, I do like the fact that the miscellaneous errors is at the top, because that's just people making, let's call them honest mistakes. Things happen. If you don't do anything, you'll never break anything. If you do stuff, things will break. So it's what it is. Privilege misuse, yes, I'm certain there are a couple there that are using the boss's password because it's easier than to go to two-factor authentication. And the biggest culprit, I think, is organizations putting too much security hurdles up. At some point, if you tell everybody to change their passwords twice a day and it needs to be 32 characters long, containing only special characters, people will definitely start looking for workarounds. I mean, Microsoft has been trying to make us not use passwords for so long now, but use passkeys or something like that. Google is doing that as well to get around that issue a little bit. Don't think it works, but there will definitely be reasons to do that. Now, is that malevolent? Yes, you're not supposed to do that. There's reasons that those things are in place, but yeah, again, but I don't think that's that big a chunk of the 31% privilege misuse. I would think that at least 25%. I have no idea. My gut feeling is actual. I know I'm going to get fired next week. I'm going to take everything I can take. Something like that.
Yeah, that is a less rosy perspective on things, and it's probably also there's probably a decent amount of weight to that. I'll give you that.
I do wonder, however, what the 0.6%. Other is.
I mean, we will never know. We will never know.
Delegating?
Could be. Delegating. That's what you could. Yes. When you follow someone through the.
Let someone follow through.
Well, true. Yeah, there is that.
That's the fun part. It's not the person that follows through that's at fault. It's the person that let the person follow through that's at fault. That's how we get in train.
Okay. Well, the final bit on threat actor motives in breaches is the kind of this is something that leans probably even more into the reasoning that Jon shared. 89% of threat actor motives in breaches is, drumroll, financial. Yeah, unfortunately. And 17% of it is espionage. And again, we've got a 0.6%, same as the other 0.6%. Yeah. Curious. Which is other.
Well, that's tailgating. What's the motivation? I need to use a toilet.
Yeah, it could be.
Makes total sense.
Yeah. So that's threat actor motives in breaches generally. There is one final graph that talks about the motive for state-sponsored actors and incidents. Kind of unsurprisingly, the top two are reversed. Espionage is 74%, because state-sponsored actors, that's what they're there for. They're there to get the secrets, to get the info. But, you know, 28% of them are also sort of financially motivated. And, you know, we see that a lot with like pig butchering schemes and sort of a lot of crypto-related schemes. Like, that's just all about generating huge amounts of money for certain nation states that are in, so we say, less fortunate positions financially. And it's by their own very design. Much big business.
Yeah, because that's a nice thing, because even with the non-state actors, the espionage 70%, that's not all espionage, James Bond kind of stuff. This is also corporate espionage, patent finding, IP retrieval, things like that, right? That also falls under espionage. That's why they made a separate graph from this one. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of wondering the financial motivation for state actors. I mean, isn't taxing the populace so much easier?
Yeah, but if you can do taxing and taxation and get, you know, a couple of billion in of crypto, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the crypto does make it a lot. I'm not gonna say easier, because you still need some kind of, know how to do this, but it does make it possible. Because in the olden days, when you still had the banknotes in your wallet, I would assume that financial was less of a thing, because it wasn't as easy, between air quotes, to steal money. But with cryptocurrency, it's built to be used, in my opinion here, crypto is built to be used by the dark web for people that are doing shady things and people that are not that smart and using it as a way to look for use the stock market kind of stuff. But it's an anonymous currency, it's meant to be, so them falling target to these kind of things kind of just make me chuckle a little bit inside.
Yeah.
That being said, crypto is a pyramid scheme, so even if they're taking it from the bad guys, it's still some group of poor people that are being affected by it, obviously. So, do we have more time for our next one? Or
I think we can. We could maybe hit one more.
Okay, hit me one more time.
I think this next one is yours. Gen AI hockey sticks.
Where did I put that? Page 24, 25. Oh, that's the next one. Let's see. Yeah, some more of it. Well, I think when we talked about this pre-show, we were kind of surprised that the percentage of AI-assisted malicious emails over time, which is kind of the easiest way to use AI for social engineering, phishing kind of stuff, only grew linearly and not exponentially. And again, I think coming back to what I said last episode, I think that's because the people are still figuring out how to use this stuff effectively. I would actually expect more of a hockey stick in the next year's report.
Could be. I think you're probably right. I think there's more of it that is to do with the maturity of the tooling. I think you are right that there's something which is that people are getting more familiar with the tooling and its abilities to be used and abused for stuff like this. But I also think that the tooling itself has also accelerated over the time period.
For me, I still think it's less manufactured. Because don't forget that people that do social engineering correctly will target the less mature, the less, what's the word I'm looking for, knowledgeable person. They're not going to try and fish the IT director from day one. They'll go through what some lowlier persons on the totem pole and work their way up so that they can gather all the information to be able to convince the smarter people that they are actually who they think they are. So I think the tooling has been good enough for a while now that they should be more effective than this. And this is not a good thing, and this is more of a warning that we should be way more aware how dangerous this stuff is.
Yeah.
I mean, just thinking about people putting rocks on their pizza because ChatGPT told them so.
Rocks and glue, yeah. We live in a somewhat strange world.
Yes, and I think we're definitely not at the worst part of it. Things will get way worse before they get better. If they ever get better.
Well, on that note, unless there's anything else from you.
Nope.
Then that's all the time we have today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron, and every contribution really does help. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and more information about the podcast. And please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is No Rocks and Glue on My Pizza, Please, Dave.
And my name is You Just Stole My Outro.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.